Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The spirit of 44, I welcome Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently for the Hoover Institution's Digest. And this dates to the spring of 2024, 80 years since the spirit of 44 made the history of the world change directions from one that had been trampled by dictators in Moscow and Berlin into one that we live with today, of freedom in Europe, freedom in much of Asia, and freedom certainly in North America and South America. Victor, a very good evening to you. Your essay takes us to the men and women, but on the day of June 6th, it was all men, to my knowledge, who accepted the risk because it was, as I understand it, what you did in order to defend America. Do we still have memories of that? Your measure, because your book, the Second World War, we've talked about it, that history is as vital today to me and to those of us who are children of that generation as it ever was. Is that true for my children, for my grandchildren? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, it's hard to know. I mean, I've been watching the reaction of these protesters that, you know, stop bridges and they disrupt lectures and they deface statues. And when they're arrested, they get very angry and say, this can't be. There was one the other day that was making graffiti in a subway. And then when they arrested him, he started whining. And I thought, you know, 80 years ago, people your age were storming Omaha Beach in the first. I mean, that was where most of the 2,400 that were killed on D-Day were killed, on that one of the five beaches. And they didn't, I mean, they didn't choose to be there. And when they landed, they saw that there had been a massive screw-up. They'd underestimated the enemy's resistance. The weather was a little worse than they thought. They were let off too early in the surf. But the point is, they kept going, even though most of them in the first wave got killed. And that was it. Their lives were over with. But then the people who followed them kept going. And this wasn't supposed to happen because these were Americans and they were going up against, you know, Panzer SS division, the Das Reich division, who were killers. The men in their early 30s had been fighting for 4 years in Russia and before that in Poland. And they were, well, they had better equipment, and yet they went right into them. And so that was a unique group of people, and that they came out of the Depression. They fought World War II and won it. They came back, and they built the country. And it's very unusual. It's very hard to take, John, that this current generation that has such complaints about prior generations as racist, sexist, insensitive, illiberal, and yet they're the beneficiary of everything that generation gave them. And so far, they haven't really performed up to the same standards of the people who bequested and gave them things. So it's a stark reminder that, I don't know, that I don't know if that we have people in the United States that could do that again. I really don't.
The reason it remains a mystery to me, I mean, my parents were there, and my father was part of it that morning. They didn't talk about it, Victor. You know that. You talk to enough veterans. They never talked about it. Do we know why? That because they had an opportunity to tell us. But I've had to discover what happened that day in research or reading books like yours. Why didn't they talk about it?
Well, I think that generation had their parents, some of them had been in World War I and said that was the great war to end all wars, and you were never going to have a war again. They went to high school in the late 30s, and they read about it, and they thought, we're not going to get involved over there. And 39 went away, and 40 went away, and most of 41 went away, and they weren't going to get involved. And suddenly, they attacked Pearl Harbor, and suddenly Hitler declared war on us, and we were involved. And they didn't. And then they went over there, and they thought, we're Americans, and they thought, wow, we've got to go 3,500 miles over there. Wow, there's such a thing as a Panther tank, a BF-109. These Germans are killers. And then they saw their best friends or their people they met in training just butchered in the first years of the war. I mean, if you were in a B-17 in 1942 without fighter escort trying to bomb occupied France or Germany in daylight, you're going to be dead. You know, that was some of those squadrons had 80-90% fatality rates. And if you were on Omaha Beach or you were, if you were in Italy, you didn't have a great chance of making it. I just think they didn't want to talk about what they saw. They didn't think that they were not thinking this was going to happen. And when it happened, they thought, well, it's over now. We'll just keep it quiet. And many of them, when they were older, did talk about it. When they had distance to look back at the magnitude of the achievement, I think they wanted to tell people about what they had seen. But not for the first few years. At least in my father, who was on a B-29, and cousins that were in tanks. I had a cousin, my mother's first cousin, was killed right after Normandy. And I'm named after Victor Hansen, who was killed in the 6th Marine Division, my father's brother, on Okinawa. But I don't want to make a condemnation of a generation, but when you see all of the anger and the whining of this young generation, and maybe all of us, it started with us, the baby boomer, but we inherited a great country, and so it's very irritating to hear people make complaints against that generation that they not only won World War II, they won the Cold War, and they gave a very sophisticated modern America from a very rural, poor country, and yet we call them illiberal. It just doesn't make any sense when we couldn't emulate what they did.
The spirit of 44, is it still with us anywhere? I know I resonated to your article when I was reading it, but do you see it in America anywhere, no matter the politics?
It, yeah. You see it in police forces. You see it in fire departments. You see it in the military. Some of the people, I was embedded twice in Iraq, and what I saw in places like Taji, Fallujah, places like that, people were very brave and very highly patriotic. You can see it in rural America. I live in rural America. I'm always amazed when I see, I'll be driving around and I'll see somebody, you know, with 70 pounds of shingles on his shoulder, and he's tiptoeing along a crest of a roof, maybe 90 feet above the ground. And, you know, in construction, you see it in the muscular classes. Not, I don't see it so much in the world that I inhabit, the academic world. I don't think the quality of the academic research or the loyalty to the country is there in academia in a way that academics in the 1930s and 40s, although left of center, there was a consensus that they were going to use their efforts to promote American victory. So I think the muscular classes have the same spirit, but I'm not sure about the globalized bicoastal elite classes.
Well, that would be a place to start then, to explain how it is that there is the opinion that if we back away and disentangle from the Russian aggression in Europe and the Russian, Chinese, North Korean, Iranian aggression in the Middle East and the Chinese aggression in the Pacific, if we back away from that, we're going to wind up with the world that they tried to stop in 1944. Is that understood by the younger people, Victor?
Well, we were a nation of immigrants, but we were the host, that is, the native-born had such confidence in the foundational principles of the country, they thought, and they were so confident that the people who came here had made a choice to abandon their prior culture and be infused in the new culture, that the integration, the osmosis, the assimilation was rapid. But today, when you see these people shouting death to America, Are they blocking major thoroughfares? Are they're endangering people's lives on the Golden Gate or the Manhattan Bridge? Or they're trying to chase Jewish students into the Cooper Union Library? And there's 50 million people. It's an all-time 55 million people were not born in the United States. So I think one of our problems is that we've redefined the immigrant as superior to the native-born American, with no responsibility to assimilate, integrate into the traditions and customs of America. That we're reverting to a tribal society, both with immigration and then with people who claim minority status or this particular ethnic or racial or gender status, and there's no cohesion. And the other, that was a pretty brutal generation. They said, if you come to the United States, you made the decision. We didn't tell you to come. So if you want to come from Poland or you want to come from, you know, Australia or whatever you're coming, you made the decision. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to teach you the Star Spangled Banner. You're going to learn about the Pledge of Allegiance. You're going to sing God Bless America. And you can go cook with your Polish food. You can wear, have some Australian habits. But that's periphery. The interior, the center of your life is going to be fully assimilated Americanism. And today that would get you in trouble for saying that at a university.
Is there merit then to bringing it up, Spirit of 44? Is it too far away from the experience of the internet and modern times? You have contact with the young people as you teach.
I have. I find that I like young people. I teach young people, but with very few exceptions, Hillsdale College students are obviously an exception because they have taken these courses and they take civics. And many of them have done so in high school. But for the most part, the students I teach, if you say to them, John, D-Day, you get a blank stare. If you say to them, Normandy, you get a blank stare. If you say World War II, you get a blank stare. If you ask them who won World War II, they have no idea. So they have been taught a lot of other things. But it wasn't World War II or the Civil War. And I do this all the time when I talk to students. I find that they don't have any reference. So it's not so much that you should remind them about D-Day and what Omaha Beach was and Utah Beach and Mary St. Eglise and the 101st and the 82nd. That would not be possible because the basic referent, D-Day, World War II, the invasion of Europe by the democracy, they don't know that. They don't know what caused World War II. And we're headed in the direction where that knowledge is considered somehow illiberal. And so we're getting more and more. I think everybody doesn't understand that we think there's an act of commission and omission. So when you're committing to the DEI or whatever this new therapeutic coursework is, there's also the second part of omitting. There's only 24 hours in the year. You've made a decision to take out history and civics and national identity. And the result is what we see today with all these protests or this anger or this kind of pampered generation, or 10 million people walking into the country. We have no idea who they are. You ask any of the 10 million, are you here because of D-Day? What do you think of what America did in World War II? They have no idea. They don't care. And yet the country they're coming into is a product of that. The freedom, the prosperity, the openness, the transparency, the judiciary, all of that was fought for and preserved at D-Day and other places like D-Day, and yet the people, we're not making an effort. I'm not blaming them, I'm blaming us.
80 years went very quickly and down the memory hole for younger people, unless Victor Davis Hanson, writing The Spirit of 44 for the Hoover Digest, we're going to turn to another contemporary story, that of the National Public Radio. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows laundry day should be easy. Achieve maximum versatility with a dryer door that swings open either way, making load transfer from washer to dryer a breeze. Plus, with LG ThinQ, save time by controlling your washer remotely. Shop LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances, today at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.